If your horse is a non-runner, you can get money back on all Cheltenham Festival races. Paddy Power.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Road to Cheltenham. It's time for our usual gallop through what happened last week, which, thanks to the weather, wasn't that much, but also looking ahead to the weekend. And we're also going to try and imagine the Sporting Life Arkle. That's coming up in a moment, Ruby. First of all, how are you?
I'm great, Lydia. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. I'm fine. What did you make of the rearranged Warwick card? It was great to have it on a Monday. It really woke me up at the start of the week. And we saw All Mankind ranged up against Sky Pirate.
Yeah, it was wonderful to have it back on and great to see it happening so sharply and swiftly in the UK, which tends to happen much more in Ireland. Now, I understand the finances and et cetera are so much different that it's much easier here, but it was great to see a card rearranged so quickly. But All Mankind, I don't know. I think Dan Skelton said afterwards he found it easy to watch. I'm not sure I found it particularly easy to watch. And that was from Flagfall. I mean, when Harry lined him up and he went through the tape, if you watch him going to the first fence, you're looking at a horse with a hood and quite severely baited, and you're thinking he's going to be keen with him. But actually look at Harry's right rein and how loose it is. And Harry doesn't slow him down. It's almost as if he wants the horse to even go faster than the horse has gone. And he doesn't really take him to the first fence, which he's quite low and quick at. And it's not until he's jumped the second fence and heading up past the winning post that you can actually see why he might need a hood, that he takes a hold to Harry Skelton and starts to race forward. And he rounds the bend. Now, he's quite good at the next three fences, 3, 4, and 5. He's tight at one or two of them and brave at another one. But when they climb up the hill in Warwick and run down directly opposite the stands and Sky Pirate moves up behind them, All Mankind doesn't come alive. You're almost expecting him to hear the horses coming behind him and from the tear away in front, but he doesn't. And he faces to that line of 5 then. And there was some indifferent jumping here. I'm not sure what he does at the first one, the 6th. It just wasn't good to look at. I don't know what he did, but it wasn't great to watch. He was good at the 7th. He got tight to the 8th fence. He's low at the 9th. And he's really quick at the 10th. And then he sprints onto the bend. Now, the second last, I nearly fell off the armchair watching it. And Harry Skelton sits tight. But you would have to like the fact that All Mankind got his front feet out very quickly and he never really looked like falling. When you watch it the second time, I suppose you know what's going to happen the second time, but when you watch it, he didn't ever look like falling. He was good at the last and then he galloped Sky Pirate into the ground. He stayed really well. He's not a straightforward ride. I think we highlighted that after the Hinder the 8th as well. Harry Skelton does do a good job on his back, and I think as regards Sky Pirate, to be honest, he would look like he'd be exploiting his handicap hurdle mark if he was mine.
Okay, so you'd be leaning towards the county, maybe something like that, or even
the hurdle.
I think he's still in, isn't he, on Sunday?
Yeah, be turned around soon enough, but yeah, possibly the county.
At the start of that, did you say that All Mankind was quite severely bitted?
I think he wears a chifney, doesn't he?
But can you explain to everyone at home what that means?
It's an extra ring underneath the bit. It's to give you more control, but you watch him going to the first fence, you're thinking, God, he can run in a plain snaffle. Now, he does take a bite of Harry after jumping too, but he didn't look like your typical horse that wears a hood that's going to run away or tear off. He looked almost behind the bridle at times.
Have you gone slightly off him since Sandown? I know you highlighted that he wasn't straightforward then, but
I wouldn't say I've gone off him since Sandown. It's just what the other horses have done. What both Shishkin and Energamine have done, to me, looks, and the betting reflects it, it looks stronger than what All Mankind has done.
Yeah, it's the three at the top of the market, isn't it? Shishkin being odds on, Energamine next in. Bit of a jump to All Mankind, and then double that to the next ones in the market, which bring in Franco Deport and Captain Guinness. There are just 19 left in the Arkle, even at this stage. This is a race that can often cut up small to a small field.
It can, but that kind of depends too on what horses you have at the top. And you have three very good horses here, exactly. All Mankind, Energamine, Shishkin. So who wants to take them on? But I think as regards the race is concerned, and it won't suit each way punters, but for me, looking at it, once those three quality horses line up, I think it'll be a cracking renewal.
Well, it's the race for that reason that has got everybody talking, and we're going to try and rather audaciously at this stage in February imagine how the Sporting Life Arkle might well be run, because you've got these three key horses that between them are going to very much dictate how the race is going to be run. So let's try and imagine it. Imagine it, Ruby. You've got All Mankind, Enigamin and Shishkin, the big three, lining up for the Arkle on the Tuesday, the second race on the Tuesday of the Cheltenham Festival.
Well, I think it's pretty straightforward to anybody who's looked at it. You look at All Mankind and Warwick, he lines up in front and nobody goes to go with him, and he pops off and he goes. Now you look at Enigamin in Leopardstown, again, he lines up at the front, jumps out and nobody takes him on. And then you look at Shishkin in Kempton beside Gumball. He lines up beside Gumball, but he immediately sits in a couple of lengths behind him. And I think that's what we will see at the start. Both Enigamin and Mankind going, Shishkin lining up really close to them, but ultimately sitting behind them like he did Gumball at Kempton.
Do you think Harry Skelton and All Mankind will be on the inside of Enigamin?
I think he will. I think he's the one that, to me looking at them, is the one that might tear away and want to be in front. And I could see Paul Townend allowing Harry Skelton to be there, whereby if All Mankind does race forward, Paul can take a pull and sit back. And if he doesn't, Paul can make up his own mind whether he wants to go faster or go slower on the outside of him.
Now, in order to imagine how the 2021 Arkle might be run, we've gone back over past Arkles and had a look at those. And you picked out two in particular, Ruby. The 2018 Arkle, which featured Petit Mouchoir and St. Calvados hairing off together. And also the 2012 Arkle, which the great Arkle that featured Sprinter Sacra, Cucard and Alpha Off.
Yeah, and Lydia's trying to imagine which way this race will be run. Can you really see Enigamin and All Mankind doing what Petit Mouchoir and St. Calvados did? I don't think I can. Whereas I can see them maybe doing more what Cucard and Alfaroff did. All Mankind being in Cucard's position, Enigamin being in Alfaroff's position, and ultimately Shishkin being where Sprinter Sacra was, rather than where Footpad was. I think that's the more of a race I could see on paper happening. I just can't see them doing what happened in 2018.
Yeah, because then it was St. Calvados and Petit Mouchoir egging each other on. St. Calvados was the first to crack, but it even paid for Petit Mouchoir. He ended up finishing third, and the horses that were much further behind Footpad obviously won, but even Brain Power picked him up for second. So you're saying that this time around you think that Enigamin, Paul Tanner, has got that bit more control of Enigamin. He's not just sort of one-dimensional and needing to hair off.
I don't think he is. He doesn't strike us as a front-running tearaway, whereas St. Calvados and Petit Mouchoir both were. And Footpad had made it in all his novice chases before he went to the Arkle, but he ultimately sat well in off a strong pace. Now, a bit like Enigamin, Footpad had never made a mistake over fences till he went to the Arkle. And if we picked him up facing into the back straight in the Arkle, you'll see Petit Mouchoir and St. Calvados are gone clear and Footpad makes a mistake. Now, that can happen, but also where a mistake happens enables you, gives you the chance to recover or not recover. And if you make it early enough, of course you can recover. It's late in the race that it becomes more of an issue for you.
But Footpad, he was helped to be able to recover by the fact that the front two were going too hard.
They were. Ultimately they were. But and he was a very good horse. But I just can see this race being more like the Sprinter Sacra version, where they face into the back straight and maybe Cucard at that stage, Alvaro was able to take it off him. Could I see Enigamin taking it off All Mankind that early? I could see him forcing it that early. And then Shishkin sitting behind. Now, ultimately, Alvaro ends up making a mistake because at the last ditch, because Sprinter Sacra had him under so much pressure. I mean, Alvaro went to stand off. Sprinter Sacra is behind him. He stands off even further, yet lands further in front of him. Now, I'm not saying Shishkin is Sprinter Sacra. And maybe Enigamin is a better two-miler than Alvaro ever was. But I can see that kind of a race, but it's, even if you look at the top of the hill, even though there's three horses in this race, it could be over by the top of the hill.
Yeah.
Arkles often are.
Yeah, yeah, agree. I'm just going to take you to the 2019 Arkle for a couple of reasons. I realise the race wasn't as deep as we're facing with Happily for 2021, but things can happen, can't they? And this is where, at the six, where the race was completely blown apart. Not Nanus had just joined Anua at the previous fence, and these were two horses that everybody was talking about taking each other on up front. And of the two, I thought the headlong Not Nanus would come out worse, but actually it's Anua who makes the mistake and falls and then brings down Kalashnikov, and that just blows that race wide open.
It does, and that's always in jockeys' heads. I mean, obviously, I just can't see either Paul Townend or Nico de Bonneville being directly behind All Mankind, or I can't see Nico being directly behind Paul or Harry Skelton. You will, on novices, be factoring that in and hopefully giving yourself the room to avoid either of the two in front of you or either one to tip up. So that was a bigger field in that Arkell, and Kalashnikov ended up with nowhere to go. I think in this article, it'll be a smaller field and things like that happening. I think the risk is reduced in a smaller field.
So you're thinking it could be all over at the top of the hill or three out?
It just happens that way so often when you get three big ones and a couple take each other on and the third one joins in. I mean, Sprinter Sacra had what we thought were two horses that had finished in front of him in the Supreme Novices. He had them beat up a stick at the top of the hill. In the Arkell, even though Putty Mouchoir was in front, Footpad was galloping over him by the time they began the descent down to the third lap fence. It just can be tactics in the early exchanges in the 2 mile chase in Cheltenham can nullify quite a few horses.
Can we talk about the tricky second last? Because we've both mentioned it. I highlighted it with reference to Anegamine because it comes off a left-handed bend. It's quite quick after that. They've tried a couple of sightings after of this fence, haven't they? Just before the bend, and it's been just after the bend for a while now. And I'm thinking about Enegamine's habit of jumping right. I just want to take you through a couple of times when the race did change at the second last, and quite recently. First of all, there would be Vanateur. He was trying desperately to put it up to Duvan, but his race ended at the second last.
He did, but I think, when you look through these examples, with the exception maybe of Gunball in November, who may have beaten Eldorado Allen, I think the second last catches out the one who's coming off second best. Mm-hmm. And it always caught out the one at the second last bench that maybe was starting to feel, when it was before the bend, that was starting to feel the pinch as well. And I think off the bend, it can catch out the horses who are coming off second best. Duvan absolutely flies it. Vanatoo ends up in a heap. But it does come up quick, and it's only 5-6 strides from the bend to the fence. But it's an attacking fence for horses with scope. And I think watching All Mankind maybe at Warwick at the second last, which comes up further from the bend than the one in Cheltenham does, I'd be more worried about him than maybe the other two.
Interesting. That's what I mean about the Onua Not Nanus thing. My perception of which ones might come off worse. Actually, when you actually have a race, that's why we have the race, to find things out in actuality. You know, it can be different. Obviously, we had Charbel still leading two out in 2017, but there was a certain Altior looming up on his right.
Exactly, putting the pressure on. And it's the one under pressure that needs the big jump, that's going as fast as it can and can't generate the power to get off the ground on the long stride that ends up on the floor. The one who's able to quicken will have the power to get there, and the one that's actually feeling the pinch and beginning to tire a little bit can't make that big jump, and that's what's caught them both out.
Now, as I mentioned, just 19 left in the Sporting Life Arkell, and the forfeits, the horses that are no longer standing their ground in the Novice Hurdles, the Triumph, and also in the Novice Chases, they were published this week. And there are some significant news lines that I want to mention to you, Ruby. First of all, Envoy Elan is now only in the Marsh, so a nice definite target for him. Roy Pagai retains the Brown Advisory and National Hunt Chase as options, as well as the Gold Cup. And If the Cat Fits is now only in the Brown Advisory and the Stayers Hurdle. Now, I'd go Stayers Hurdle, wouldn't you? He's not in the Reynolds Town at Ascot this weekend.
I would. I think fences have made him look very slow. I'd be going back over hooks.
I don't think he likes fences at all. I don't think he's taken to them that well, even though he's got some good results on paper. Some significant no-goes. Andy Dufresne and Protectorat are both out of the Marsh and the Brown Advisory. And despite winning the Grand National Trial at Punchestown over the weekend, the big dog is no longer in the National Hunt Chase.
No, he probably has the profile, but rating-wise, he's still well below what might be required.
We do have one final bit of evidence to consider this week, don't we? And this was just yesterday. We had Chantry House returning at Wetherby.
Yeah, look, it was form-wise, Lydia, I don't know what we learned. Obviously, Chantry House was third in last year's Supreme. He was a bit high at the last with a circuit to race. But I think we picked him up again at the last in the back straight. Both Chantry House and Coconut Splash are waiting on the Wolf, who's been under the pump for a long way. Nobody wanted to commit into the straight. Chantry House is then all just too good for Coconut Splash. He jumped the second last well, gets under the last. There's an immediate injection of speed on landing over the last when Nico gives him a squeeze, and then he sits up on him again and he coasts up to the winning post. Look, I don't know. He could be a horse maybe to run in the marsh, but on that form, you'd have to be going by whatever Nicky Henderson tells us.
Yes, he has said he feels strong in the novice chasing division. So I suppose that is something to bear in mind. So that's Chantry House. We've seen him at Wetherby and he remains in the Marsh Novices Chase. Now let's talk about the novice hurdlers, shall we? And some action, first of all, before we talk about the horses that aren't going or are going to Cheltenham. The Devil's Coachman, Ruby, surely he is now forcing his way into the Supreme picture.
He is. He's been good in his last two starts. He only has one disappointing run at Christmas behind Appreciated. And every horse can have one off day. But this was a really slowly run race. Power of Paws and the Devil's Coachman. You can see them here after they jump the first hurdle, how slow they're going. And the race doesn't really pick up until they almost approach the second last hurdle when Fire Attack comes from the back and ranges up on the outside. And they eject a lot of speed into the race. Now, the Devil's Coachman is a quick horse and he's always in control of it. French Light comes from the back to finish second. Now, he obviously carried 7 pounds less than he should have. There was a clerical error there and he carried 11.7 instead of 12 stone. But having said that, the Devil's Coachman was still impressive and was always looked like the likely winner, even in a sprint. He's a fast horse going the right direction and he could definitely be a player in the spring.
And was it that it was just a bit too early to pitch him into a grade one when he was behind Appreciate It? Has he improved since? Or is it something about that level of race that he was exposed in? That's what you've got to conjure with him.
Yeah, it is. But I think Noel Mead was disappointed at Christmas. He's a horse he always held in high regard. And I think the horse is beginning to show the fate Noel Mead had in him.
Let's talk about Wild About Oscar. This is the horse that was pulled up behind Brave Man's Game in the Challow. He wrapped the last hurdle over on the far side and maybe seemed to jar himself a little bit. He was back at Exeter on Sunday.
Yeah, it was. And to watch it, to me, when they came up by the stands the first time, you think, oh, they're going really steadily. It was obviously really bad ground. He's quite keen in Harry Skelton's hands. And you can see him even as they run down into the back straight in Exeter, how he's still tanking with Harry. But what's really telling is, by the time they jumped the third last hurdle and are heading to the second last hurdle, even though to my eye they look to go slow, look at how many horses are pulling up in the back of the shot. They can't even complete. And this horse jumps the second last well, jumps the last, stumbles, but he still manages to regain his momentum up the hill in Exeter and hit the line quite strong. I'd say he's a really nice horse and it was a good performance.
I agree. He's a good horse. He's going out to his left quite a bit. Afterwards, Harry Skelton was feeling that maybe the Ballymore just might be a step too far at this stage in the career, in this horse's career. The sense was that he's still quite raw.
Yeah, and it could be. And there's look, not every horse is a grade one novice hurdler. A certain Aldo Photo didn't turn up in Cheltenham as a novice hurdler.
Yeah, there's plenty of time, isn't there? There was a sound of bubbles bursting at Warwick on Monday in the very first race. Those bubbles being Lacalle's Article and Stella Magic. They've been taken out of Cheltenham. They finished behind, well, Lacalle's Article finished behind Benny's Oscar.
Yeah, and you can see that the third last, Stella Magic, whatever was up at him, he's completely out of the race by the third last hurdle. And Benny's Oscar, he keeps finding plenty in front. A cheap purchase, he only cost 16,000, Benny's Oscar. I'd say he's money well spent.
He really is a good-looking horse. No fluke about it from points. Lacalle's Article, though, he just looked lethargic to his jumps. And Stella Magic, I still retain the faith in that horse. I think I've seen so much from him prior to this that I'm prepared to think that this was a blip.
Well, it's too bad to be true. So yeah, it's obviously a blip.
Okay. News then. Gentleman's Game. Mas Morris, immediately after the Dublin Racing Festival, said he was a bit cool about Cheltenham for Gentleman's Game. I think this is the right call. They're missing the festival.
Well, he won a point in the autumn, and Mouse only has him a short period of time. He's had two quick runs, yeah. But I can see why Mouse has his eye in the future. He's a really good horse.
Yeah, that 3-mile race, at the novice at Punchestown would seem to have Gentleman's Game German game's name on it, if I can even say that. Gordon Elliott's juveniles, he's sorting them out. He has revealed that to you, Ruby, that Zanahir is not going to be running in the Supreme. You know, you were worried about it last week. He's now heading for the triumph with Koulixios. T. Hoopoo's still in the Supreme. Duffelcote is still in the Ballymore and the Albert Bartlett.
Yeah, but I think Gordon said somewhere in the week that he was struggling a little bit with Duffelcote.
Okay.
So it'll be watch this space with him. I'm nearly sure I read that when he was talking about Zanahir and Koulixios. And he had left the option open for Tahipu, who I think is going to run Fairy House next week. But I'm nearly sure I read he was struggling with Duffelcote.
Now, with the Triumph, I'm always bearing in mind that a horse like Burning Victory suddenly entering from stage right on in the late February. So there are six horses still in the Triumph that are still unraced over hurdles. Two of them are trained by Willie Mullins. And he's also got an interesting horse, Haute en Couleur, who's had one run over hurdles in France and still is in both the Triumph and the Supreme. Can you tell me about that horse?
He's a fine big horse. He's obviously won. He's only starting in France. And he's in full training with the plan, obviously, to maybe go. Well, I think the plan is to go to the Triumph anyway. I don't think he'll run in Fairy House, but the other two might, Taxtra Max and Far Out. They're both a bit like Burning Victory going to Fairy House next weekend. And if one of them happens to win and show they could be a Triumph horse, then so be it. And if they don't, I'm sure they'd be novices for next season.
And our last chance saloon is in the Adonis at Kempton on Saturday week. And we might see Margaret's Legacy, who's unbeaten over hurdles, coming over from France, trained by Hugo Merien. It would be great to see if that horse turns up in the Adonis. Horses that are either only in one race or still have options in terms of the novice hurdles at Cheltenham. Gaillard de Menil, the Ballymore favourite, is only in the Ballymore. But Statler and Fakira have options in the Ballymore or the Albert Bartlett still.
Yeah, I can see them both run. I can see them both running in the Albert Bartlett, but were the Ballymore to fall apart between now and Wednesday, 4 weeks or whatever it is, they have an option. But they both look like Ballymore, or they both look like Albert Bartlett horses to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. But punters are always aware that horses who are doubly or even triply entered, even at this stage, could yet have late switches because of developments, as you've just explained. So appreciate it, Bally Adam, Bollinger, Metier. They're all still both in the Supreme and the Ballymore. Henry de Bromhead has said that Bollinger, he's leaning towards the Ballymore. Appreciate it. You know, Willie Mullins says that he's heading towards the Supreme. I feel, I could be wrong, that there's less potential at the front of the market than perhaps usual for some last-minute switcheroos.
Yeah, but most of them, especially with the Irish ones, would be always covering yourself for travel. If you both didn't go and you couldn't get out for Tuesday, at least you're still in Wednesday's race. Small things like that, a storm brew, stand on a shoe, where you might think, God, won't be able to run Tuesday, but I will be able to run Wednesday. So you leave horses in for those reasons, that if something goes pear-shaped and you miss your original target, you have a backup.
Time now to catch up on your Mrs. Paddy Power Mare's chase tip, Ruby. Ellie May, continuing to carry all before her. What did you make of her latest success?
I thought she was good in this. Lydia, obviously, they lined up all across the track and there was a really good gallop. Shattered Love was up towards the forefront with Yukon Lil, but I think when they went up past the stands and over towards the fourth fence, Shattered Love looked to be well within her comfort zone. And it actually looked like Ellie May was struggling a little bit at the 2 mile trip. But watch the approach to the fifth fence. Obviously, Ellie May gets some kickback in her face or something. She shakes her head, pricks her ears, and then jumps the fence. She's a real little character. But the further the race developed, the more Ellie May was going strong. Up to the second last, she's hand galloping over the opposition, jumps it well, and Mark Walsh just lets her extend the way to win. Now, Shattered Love does rally well from the back of the last, and you're thinking, wow, stepping up and trip would really suit Shattered Love. They will turn up in Cheltenham on the same conditions. Ellie May will have a £3 penalty. Shattered Love won't. But when you watch the early part of the race, I think going up and trip will actually suit Ellie May every bit as much as it'll suit Shattered Love.
Yeah. I agree with that. She just looked as though she was going as fast as she could in the early stages. She's quite short in stature. Will Cheltenham's fences prevent a problem?
She's tiny. No, she's brave as a lion, but she is very smart.
There is some confusion about the race conditions for the Mrs. Paddy Power Mare's Chase, and I do understand that, everybody. Here's a conversation between Eric Dean, Richard Cook and Darren Clabby, they've been having about what they think the relative weights are going to be. And I'm not surprised there's some confusion out there because the race conditions are quite hard to track down. But Darren Clabby's got it right. And the key part of his description there is the penalties from after the 30th of September 2019. So that means, Ruby, for instance, that Ellie May will be carrying a £3 penalty for her Thurles Grade 2 win in January. Shattered Love doesn't have a penalty because her Grade 1 win in the JLT was years ago. But if Put the Kettle On were to turn up here, she would carry a £5 Grade 1 penalty for her Arkle success.
Yes, and I think she is the only mare I can think of right now that would be carrying a Grade 1 penalty since mare to win a Grade 1 chase since September 2019. I stand to be corrected, please. Forward your tweets to my PA.
Muggins here. Yeah, that's me, guys. Benny de Dieu. Now, she is out of Cheltenham. Now, this news eventually came out after some drifts and much speculation on social media over the weekend. Eventually, Ruby, Willie Mullins made a statement on Tuesday evening to say that they'd been trying to get her to Cheltenham, but she isn't going to make it. What happened? And what do you think about how the news came out?
Willie is the last man in the world to give up. So when he's given up, it really means he doesn't have any time. So and how it came out, I read about it when Willie released a statement on Tuesday, was it?
Yeah, Tuesday evening. But, you know, the rumours were rife before then. You know, if there's a doubt about a horse, surely it's beholden on connections to make a statement and saying, you know, there is a problem here.
Yeah, there could be plenty of horses in doubts in Willie's, and until he decides he's given up, he doesn't say anything. And he didn't decide to give up until Tuesday, and that's when he said it.
You were explaining earlier in the season, Ruby, that from a sports person's point of view, you want to keep your cards as close to the chest as long as possible. And you know, I do get that, but we're talking about, you know, the reputation of the sport.
You are, but it bounces back to if he says on Saturday the mare's in doubt, I don't think I'll make it, but then that changes and she does make it. I think when Willie does say something, that's it. And when he pulled the plug on Tuesday, that's it. She's not going to be put back in. Whereas if he said, not happy with her, and he puts her back in, people think the same way, Lydia. People are always going to think there's something else going on.
Shall we? Libby has been in touch. She says, we've had a bonkers year, anything is possible. Altior might just pull the rabbit out of the hat. Now, clearly, initially, Nicky Henderson was thinking, I'm going to stick with the Game Spirit for Altior. And then a few hours later, they had a rethink and decided they weren't actually going to run in the Game Spirit and they're going straight to Cheltenham. That surely means that he runs in the Champion Chase rather than the Ryanair. And it means we and Nicky Henderson have less evidence to work on.
Yeah, and it's a tricky one. Obviously, maybe, I don't know why Altior is not going to go to the Game Spirit. To me, he looked like a horse that was driving a bit more racing. The way he jumped in Kempton the last time we saw him, he needs to be sharper, he needs to be more alive. So they'll have to work on that at home. But I get the feeling Nicky would love to run him, and circumstances have just gone against him.
We'll close this section with a thought from David Brown, who said, did anyone think Splinter Sacra could do it? Shaka needs to get there in one piece, and even then, he has never been there and done it. In the words of Bon Jovi, keep the faith. Now, earlier in the series, we've been talking about the French-trained mare, Paul Saga, David Cottin, responsible for her. She's got an entry in the Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle, but she came over to Warwick last week, and she was equal, Ruby, to Brexit, to COVID, to the British weather. She hung on for the rescheduled Warwick race, but she wasn't equal to Molly Zolly's wishes.
No, not on the day she wasn't. But there was still a lot to like about what Paul Saga did. She was a bit fresh and keen early in the race with Brian Hughes. She jumped the first hurdle really well and the third hurdle. You see how the transition from French hurdles to English were no problem to her. And when you play the race on for a circuit back roughly to where they started, Molly Zolly's wishes is still going along really nicely in front. But your eye is always drawn to Paul Saga over the fourth last and over the third last. You're thinking, wow, how far is this going to go and win? And then it's almost like you just switched Paul Saga off. Now, she was coming off a layoff. She probably blew up. But Molly Zolly's wishes is an improver as well. And you'd really like what she did. And the mares in behind are no slouches. Dol Sheeta, Eglantine Desai, both pretty decent fillies. Both probably going to struggle a bit at the top table. But Molly Zolly's wishes was impressive. But I could see Paul Sagan improving a hell of a lot for that run. Just looking at her, she looked like she got very tired.
I agree. She blew up, didn't she? And the pattern of her form says that actually she does come on quite a lot from first to second run back after a break. And I tweeted Jason Kiley, who was the person who brought her over for David Cottin. And they're still thinking about the stayers hurdle. And I think they should be, because there's a lot to like about her technique. She's clearly able to deal with the British tempo of race and also British type hurdles.
Yeah, but you take the fizz out of her, a bit like what Nicky Henderson is going to do with Champ at the weekend, that exuberance of her first run. Take that fizz out of her, the extra fitness in the tank, and she could run a good race.
Molly Zolli's Wishes took the Skeletons by surprise. She's not entered at Cheltenham. Might you see her in a graded race at Aintree? Do you think she's up to that?
Well, I'd say the handicapper's going to have his say, and that's going to be her only option, probably.
You mentioned Dolcita, Eglinton, Desoy behind, the latter slightly disappointing, but still in the Close Brothers Mares hurdle. I've got some news on that front for you, Ruby. Dame de Compagnie, Nicky Henderson has suggested, as we were discussing last week, that she might end up over hurdles for the Mares race. Might be joined by her stable companion, Vedana Blue. And Paul Nichols has even talked about perhaps McFabulous running in the stayers and not necessarily sticking to the National Spirit Aintree plan.
Look, he was good in Kempton the last day. Real stamina, I still doubt about McFabulous and Dame de Compagnie. I mean, her Coral Cup run last year is pretty solid. Verdana Blue, don't know. The last furlong of every race looks to be too far for Verdana Blue.
Also, this is something that was new to me. Goshen, you know how we've been talking about how he had atrial fibrillation? I didn't realise that Gary Moore's vets found that he wasn't suffering from that abnormality. So actually, the international hurdle, we just got to look at the tactics and how fresh he was and how he took against the way in which he was ridden. Gary Moore talking about him being claustrophobic on the inside and not enjoying being restrained.
Yeah, but he did race, really over race is the best way of putting it. And you watch it, obviously the first two hurdles were bypassed, but if you watch how hard he is pulling with Jamie Moore on the far side of your shot as they bypass the first hurdle and how keen he was. Now, when they get around to what should have been the third hurdle, Goshen is still quite keen. Jumps it okay, actually. Goes to the next one, he's very high, but when he lands, he's straight back on the bridle and he's running with Jamie Moore all the way. And up to the top of the hill, where he's a bit slow at what should have been the third last. And when he lands, he takes Jamie again and he runs his race up onto the top of Cleve Hill, round the corner and down to two out is where he's really run his race. And then he just cuts out. But to be fair to Goshen, he's so over-raced during the whole contest that he probably was entitled to fold. And he did fold. Now he goes to Wincanton at the weekend, much flatter, much leveler track, change of tactics. Maybe Jamie will just let him run and he'll settle after a furlong, being allowed to gallop. He might come back to him and we'll see what happens. He definitely has questions to answer. But when you look back at the international and look at exactly what Goshen did, you can see why it went so badly for him.
I have no doubt that the Kingwell, right-handed, flat track, return to his usual tactics, is going to suit him. He's up against Song for Someone, Navajo Pass, even Esprit du Large switching to hurdles. He's a grade one winning novice chaser. But Cheltenham, I mean, I would almost have in terms of his building his profile, a problem would have been more explicable to me in the international hurdle. Remember, in the run-up to that race, he also missed a series of potential entries. For me, he's really got questions to answer. It's a shaky-looking profile from my perspective.
It is, but you have to dream. And they'll find out on Saturday how they're getting on.
Somebody who is not letting go of the dream, and quite rightly, is Rebecca Curtis. Listener-gar Oscar, who was the winner at 50-1 of the Stayers Hurdle last season, he returns this weekend at Haydock. And he's had a breathing operation, and you can see that from the way he's run this season, why they've decided to do that.
Yeah, if you look at him in Wetherby here, he's just getting to the front, going to the second last in Wetherby. He jumps it, but his effort peters out quite quickly on the landing side. And he fades out of the race. Then he skip forward to his next run in Newbury. And the same thing, up to the third last in Newbury. He just about gets to the front of the third last. And he hangs in there to the second last. But then he fades as well. So, look, if it's his wind that was catching him, and they've tinkered with that, and the wind operation works, he did win the race. Or just Paddy Power Stairs hurdle really impressively last year. If they can get him back to that form, yeah, wonderful. But the wind up will have to have worked, because the horse we saw in Newbury and Wetherby is struggling.
Yeah, I thought there were glimmers that he still had that ability, and if there's a physical reason why he can do better, then I think that's a positive for him. They were going to go to Exeter for the Thames Handicap Hurdle. I could see the pace of a handicap hurdle really suiting him. He will need a pace to show his best. It was a really strongly run edition that he won at Cheltenham last season. Right, that's the whistle stop tour of the hurdlers. Nick Henderson has decided to do something unconventional with Champ. He was originally down to run last Saturday in the Betfair Denman Chase. With the meeting rescheduled to this coming Sunday, he's dropping down by a mile, Ruby, for the game Spirit. What do you make of that decision?
I think it's a good idea. I remember my dad did a similar thing with Comanche Court many years ago, ran him in a 2 mile chase in this to sharpen him up before the Gold Cup, and he got beaten a length or three parts of a length by Best Mate in the Gold Cup thereafter. And I could see why Nicky Henderson is doing it. The recovery from a 2 mile chase would be much less than that of a horse having raced 3 miles, and it gives him more time to train him then for Cheltenham. So yeah, it didn't surprise me at all. I thought it was a really good idea.
Yep, I tend to agree with that. So it has got lots of people talking though, and we have got a question from Gonzo.
Ruben, we all know Champ's got the class. We know he stays. Do you think the dropping trip has got anything to do with his jumping, to test his jumping at speed? Barry's ride in the RSA was one of the rides of the festival for me, the way he nursed him round. His jumping looked a bit fragile to me. Is this something he could overcome?
It is going to put more pressure on his jumping, isn't it? But it is going to help him settle.
Yeah, it's a definite learning exercise, and it'll help the horse as well. I mean, look, if we pick him up, Lydia, Nicky did highlight that he can pull hard. And I think that goes back to a hurdle race in Newbury when Aidan Coleman rode him around about the fifth hurdle, when Champ just decides that I'm not liking this speed and I'd rather be at the other end of the field, and just carts his way to the front. So that tendency was always in him to do that. Now, even if you watch his very first start over fences, and Barry Geraghty lined him up wide in Newbury, but as soon as he jumped the first fence, he dropped him directly in behind the horse in front of him, trying to get Champ to switch off. But he does latch onto the bridle round the bend towards the cross fence with him on that occasion. And even from the cross fence into the home straight, Barry was always, even though he had a long, really long rein on him, he's trying really hard to get him to switch off. And that has been a tendency in Champ to do that. Now he's jumping. We did see him on his second start in Newbury. He jumped brilliantly the first day, but he let fly at the last ditch on his second start and just got there. And he ended up winning that day. He headed on to Cheltenham. And for the dipper on New Year's Day, everything seemed to be going really well until he got to your favourite fence, the second last. Barry gave him a squeeze and he just threw himself into the middle of it. Now, I think he learnt a bit from that. But still, when he lined up in the RSA, Barry still set about settling him. And up over the first fence, you can see where he sits inside Battle Over Dione, trying to get three parts of an end behind Battle Over Dione to settle him. And then when he goes by him, he gets inside Pim and tries to settle him back off of Pim. But by the time he gets to the sixth fence, he's almost gone the opposite way. And when he lands over the sixth, you can see Barry has to give him a little nudge to get him back on the bridle. But his jumping on the second circuit in the RSA wasn't spectacular. The first down the back, the 12th, it's quite cumbersome. The water jump, the 13th, he's slow at it. The next at the ditch, the 14th, it's pop and steady and safe and slow. The 15th was the very same. And you're thinking, God, is he ever going to get going? The last ditch, same thing. It's a pop, nothing spectacular. But when they jumped the third last and arrived down the hill, he looked to the left of your shot. Manila Indo and Aloha are travelling really well, but so is Champ on the outside, and he's travelling really well. But when they quicken off the bend, the two in front, they leave Champ for a second. He jumps the second last and nods, and you're thinking, oh, he's out of the race. But then Barry Geraghty really catches hold of him and gets serious with him. You can see Champ starting to quicken. Now, I fully accept the first two are starting to slow. Mm. And they run out of steam. But Champ definitely quickens as well, and he runs home. So people are going to say, if he does go and win over 2 miles this weekend, will he stay? Well, if you look back to last year's RSA, stamina, it's 4 miles he wants watching him. And if he can run well over two and jump well, he would definitely say, yeah, he's entitled to take his shot in the Gold Cup.
Of course he's going to stay. He's going to relish the stamina of the Gold Cup. Now, Nicky Henderson was saying that one of the reasons why they addressed his breathing was that way that he lost his position 2 out in the RSA. He felt that the horse was just struggling for breath and then got a second wind and came on again. Describing him there and all the things that he did wrong or slightly wrong and yet still managed to win and the things that he overcame. He's quite an enigma. He's a fascinating horse, Champ, isn't he?
He's well named.
What do you, I mean, would you like to ride him? Is he, does
yeah,
he
can be a bit keen, but I don't think he's overly difficult. I think he's a good horse. I don't think the fall in the Dipper did him any harm. It definitely, he didn't do anything silly in the RSA. Maybe could have been a bit braver at times, but yes. He's a good horse with a lot of potential.
I think there's a burgeoning confidence about him in that camp. I feel just in the way that he's been campaigned now, that everything is starting to fall into place. It's been late, but that's the sense I'm kind of getting. Now, at Newbury in the Game Spirit, he'll be up against the likes of Greener Teen. Paul Nichols is talking about with that young horse, maybe the Champion Chase might be too much for him at this stage and he'll learn whether to go for the Ryanair. So Royal will be back as ever. And Fanny Ann Destreval, who you and I were always hoping might make up into this grade of horse. I think the flat track and return to Newbury will help him, but he's jumping under pressure when his sights have been raised. Hasn't been good enough so far.
No, but he's young and he could, the run in the what's going to call it, the Victor Chandler, it's not the Victor Chandler anymore, the Clarence House. The run in the Clarence House could have taught him a lot and he could improve for that run considerably. But I do think he's a horse that could be a Ryanair horse more than a Champion Chase horse.
Okay, same card, the Betfair Denman Chase, which is champless. But nonetheless, it has got a couple of very interesting horses on the comeback trail from the King George. Lost in Translation and Clan des Oboes. First of all, on Lost in Translation, he's had a second breathing operation. And I'm very grateful to Joe Tizard, who explained to me what had been done to the horse. The horse has had his palate cauterized for a second time. That was what happened when they did the first breathing operation. This has been done again. The horse did have a little bleed in the King George, but they heard him, his breathing a little bit thick on the gallops, and hence they've done this procedure on the horse. He says that the horse is in good form ahead of Newbury. Just explain, are the cauterizing of the palate and twice, Ruby, your thoughts on that?
I'm not a vet, but Sprinter Sackler was done several times, I think, but it cauterizes their palate. The palate's obviously a flap in their throat that moves and it does grow. So cauterize it was to tighten it up and pare a bit back off it. And it's a pretty straightforward routine operation and it does improve some horses and definitely helps some horses. But I think we're looking at Lost in Translation and Clan des Oboes. The King George seemed to go pear-shaped around about the same time for the two of them, between the 12th and 13th fences. Clan des Oboes looked kind of flat out for a second at the back of the 12th and made a mistake at the 13th. And that's where Lost in Translation seemed to cut out. So obviously his wind catching him, making him bleed, could account for that. But, you know, they're two pretty good horses, Lydia, both coming off slightly, well, Clan des Oboes slightly disappointing. Lost in Translation has been very disappointing this season. I know he's placed in last year's Gold Cup, but he kind of needs to show some sort of spark on Saturday or Sunday even, to put himself in the picture.
He's the one that's still in the Gold Cup and the Tizards are hoping that he can make that leap from the Denman to the Gold Cup. Surname is also ranging up to run at Ascot on Saturday in the Ascot Chase, back in the warm, comforting embrace of Ascot, Ruby.
Yeah, it seems to suit him. And Harry Cobden was speaking during the week that he's going to be more aggressive on Surname. He looked lacklustre in the King George to me. And yeah, maybe a return to forceful tactics will ignite something. It probably will. And he could go and win a long way and make himself the highest rated chaser in racing yet again.
Let it lie, Ruby. Let it lie. Paul was saying that the horses can be sulky.
Yeah, but the horses are. They have characters. And like horses who get beat a couple of times, they forget how to win. Horses that like to dominate, like Surname, can just give up when they get behind. And maybe a return to tactics like that will ignite a bit of adrenaline in them and make them competitive.
And Paul has also just thrown out about Frodon and Native River, the idea of the two of them taking on it for in the Gold Cup. And he's sort of flown the kite in the Racing Post stable tour that Frodon might have to be ridden slightly differently.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I could see Briney maybe changing tack after going 5 or 6 furlongs if she felt the pace was too strong. But I can't see her lining up at the tape and just letting Richard Johnson head on there, Native River, I still think she'll jump out and then make an assessment after going five or six furlongs as to what's happening. And if she does have to take back, then so be it. But it'll be a pretty strong gallop she'll be taken back off.
So you think that's something of a bluff from Paul Nicholls?
I just can't see them deciding when they get to the Gold Cup that they're going to drop Frodon in. I think I'd fall off the stand.
And also, Frodon tends to be best when he does attack and get that position early, doesn't he?
His best runs are, you look at him out sharp out the gate in the King George, sharp and fast out the gate in the Ryanair.
Yep.
It was really strong early gallop a couple of times when early in the season, maybe at Aintree with no jumps where they've been a little bit more relaxed on him. He hasn't hit the same heights.
Last race to look ahead over the weekend too, and that is Sal Saretta, who could run at Goran Park in the Red Mills Chase. Could she throw her hat into the ring for the Mrs. Paddy Power?
I suppose it's the last road of the dice for her to do so. She won her four chase starts last season. It's been disappointing this year. Fell first time up in Punchestown and pulled up in the John and Chich Fowler chase in Fairy House on the 3rd of January. But look, she was 4 from 4 last year. She's a pretty decent filly. And were she to go and win the Red Mills on Saturday or run really well in it against Anna Mix and a couple of others, yeah, she would throw her hat into the ring with Ellie May and whatever else.
And so those are the races that we are going to be looking forward to reviewing next week.
If your horse is a non-runner, you can get money back on all Cheltenham Festival races. Paddy Power.